CITR 101.9 FM and Heather's show for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities, and our theme song from Gloria Gaynor that's called I Am What I Am. 822-2487 if you want to join us, and it's a special show today because, as you probably know, yesterday afternoon the December 9th Coalition presented Talk Family to Me, a day for lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgendered people to gather and talk about the notion of family and what it means to us. So I have a couple of people joining me who were helping out in organizing that day. Kathy Mandigo, who's a physician here in Vancouver, and Craig Maynard, who works for the WCB and who's also on the December 9th Coalition's Provincial Issues Subcommittee. And we're going to talk about family, and hopefully some of the other people who were at that conference will be joining us throughout the evening as well. But if you've got something that you'd like to share with us on the topic of family, 822-2487. And also coming up, my review of the Katie Lang concert in just a second. So first of all, here's what it sounded like. This is from All You Can Eat. This is called You're Okay. And Katie was wearing a black bra last night, just in case you care. CITR 101.9 FM. She put on an amazing show last night at the Queen Elizabeth Theatre. Katie Lang and Constant Craving from Ingenue. And a really amazing show, not only because she did most of the stuff from her new album and that song and lots of stuff from her earlier career. She remarked at some point in the concert, you know, I used to have a country career. But it was amazing just to see her personality come alive on stage. She made some wonderful wisecracks, far too many for me to remember and recount to you, but there was one great moment about four songs into the show where a couple of latecomers came in who were sitting in the front row, and she began heckling them about not being able to find their seat and told them that they'd missed the best four songs of the show and it was going to get wimpy from here on in and this kind of thing. So that was really fun. And then later on in the concert, somebody threw a bra at her. And that caused her to remark that she is the Tom Jones of lesbians, which is fair, especially now that she's doing that Pussycat song. But a wonderful show, slightly expensive, $50, but it was Katie, and it was well worth it, and hopefully she won't wait another 2 years or whatever it's been, 2 or 3 years since last time she was here, to come and play in her own hometown again. Hint, 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 hint. It's Heather's show for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities, 822-2487 if you want to join us. And we're going to take a break and then come back in a few seconds and talk about the December 9th Coalition's Family Day Conference, which took place yesterday. It was an all-day conference at the Unitarian Church, divided off into different streams to talk about different topics. And it turned out to be a really exciting and validating experience for a lot of people who attended. So Kathy Mandigo and Craig Maynard are here, two of the organizers, and Ellie Newman has also joined us, who was one of the participants in the conference who spoke on the opening panel. And Ellie comes at this whole issue from a slightly different angle. He's the son of a gay father. So we'll talk about family issues in just a sec.
Yes.
CITR 101.9 FM and Unit 3 UK with We Are Family. It's Heather's show for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities, and we picked that song out especially for its appropriate theme for the evening. We're talking about family, and in particular, the December 9th Coalition's Family Day Conference, which took place yesterday at the Unitarian Church. And three of the people who were involved in that conference are here today, Kathy Mandigo, Craig Maynard, and Ellie Newman. And so first of all, I want to thank all of you guys for being here.
Well, you're welcome.
And
no problem.
Maybe what we can do to start off with, I noticed that in many of the streams that were happening at Family Day, they would start out with everybody just sort of doing a round and talking about introducing themselves and talking about their stories, which I thought was really kind of interesting. So I thought maybe we could do that tonight. and just have the three of you introduce yourselves in turn and talk a bit about how you got involved in Family Day and your family story. So why don't we start with you, Kathy?
Okay, first up, as you introduced me earlier, I'm a family physician in Vancouver, and I've worked at St. Paul's in the BC Center for Excellence for the past 3 years. How I got to be involved with Family Day was actually through Barbara Finley. We knew each other for reasons outside of the December 9th Coalition, and I became involved in the December 9th Coalition about September of last year, and basically got thrown onto the subcommittee that was organizing Family Day, and got involved way over my head very quickly.
As people tend to do in the Coalition.
I think Barbara asked me to participate in Family Day largely because of my experience as a physician, because as a GP, we often deal with people coming through our doors who don't necessarily have a physical ailment, but often come to us at times of crisis. And also, my clinical work at St. Paul's has been with HIV patients, which in itself is a situation of crisis, both at the time of diagnosis as well as in coping with the illness for the person and the person's family. So that's sort of the background that Barbara was drawing on for my involvement with Family Day.
Mm-hmm. So what about you, Ellie?
I'm Ellie Newman, and my dad's gay, and I volunteered to do the December 9th Coalition family gathering yesterday, several months ago, to give the insight of a child of gay parents' point of view and from a teenager's point of view. And
so you're how old?
I'm 16.
Okay.
Almost.
And you were on the opening panel.
And I was on the opening panel with my father,
mm-hmm.
Letting everybody know what my story was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really insightful, I think. People had a chance to learn a lot from other people and to tap on experiences that others had to share.
Great. Okay, and your turn, Craig.
Thanks. How did I get to the Family Day subcommittee? Well, I guess I wasn't looking one day and they got me with a net, and next thing you know, I was...
Gee, that sounds like a December 9th Coalition story, too.
Yeah, it is. For me, Family Day was a chance to get to know the community, the larger communities, not just the gay or the gay or bisexual community, but actually to walk down the roads and talk to the people that make up lesbians and transgendered. And to me, this subject has been more of an education and not really a hands-on or a get up close type of issue for me. So this was an excellent opportunity for me to hear the stories from the mouths of the people that are living these lives. My family story doesn't really play a big role in this, other than I'm a white male who's 33 who was born and raised in Vancouver, and came to terms with issues about bisexuality just a few years ago. So I can't really say that my family, other than just telling my family, I guess I've got, like many other stories, or similar stories, that is, that there's some difficulty in telling my family about my sexual orientation and getting over those hurdles. So I thought this would be an excellent opportunity for myself.
Mm-hmm. So maybe one of you or all of you could sort of explain, for the sake of the people who weren't at Family Day yesterday, how the whole day was structured and who was there and what happened.
Well, I'd like to start by saying that Family Day was a dream of Barbara Finley's, and I mean, personally, and I think I probably speak for other people who participated, and grateful that I got to be part of Barbara's dream of our communities coming together and talking about issues of family, because to most of our knowledge, this is the first of its kind in North America, and probably the world, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an excellent opportunity, as Craig was saying, for all of us just to come together and share our personal experiences. And certainly as a member of the organizing committee, and Greg can attest to this as well, that we, as the organizing committee, often ran into the difficulties that come up with our communities discussing and working together over issues of family. It was not easy for us to work together around these issues, and I think probably, certainly in my stream and other streams, also felt some of the emotional impact of trying to discuss issues around family and the concept of family.
Hmm. So how was the whole day kind of set up in terms of the technical aspects or logistic aspects, shall we say?
Well, I guess I can speak to this. First of all, we had no control over the weather. It seemed as though Mother Nature was going to turn this into, I described as when I looked out the window, as some sort of set heritage scene. Here it is, the snow is falling and all these people are gathered in this wonderful facility, the Unitarian Church's hall there. And it looked like something almost out of a postcard. But
especially for those of us who were in streams all day and we went in and it was raining out and we came out and there was 3 inches of snow on the ground.
But from the day, the whole idea was we would have an opening panel that would sort of get things rolling. That is, that they would tell their life experience and what they felt family meant to them. And this was coming from a perspective as opposed to what we thought the community was going to be. But it was more of an I situation. You would tell your story. And so there was, I should probably run down the list of people who were in the opening panel, and then I can just quickly move on to the rest of the structure. Mm-hmm. Janine Fuller and Julie Stein were there. They are an interracial couple, lesbian couple. Janine's name may be familiar to some of your listeners as being one of the co-owners of the Little Sisters bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
Heather, I understand you made it up there. And, and repaying the favor, you talked about being a bisexual woman and what that meant to you, and some of the debunking some of the myths and so on. Murray was there, Murray Newman, and Ellie, who's with us right now, was there, and then again talking about the gay dad situation and the child raised in that environment. Henry Koo is an Asian man living with HIV and also was Monica Chappell, who was Henry Koo, sorry, made a mistake there. That's Ed Lee. Henry was there. Ed Lee was talking about being living with HIV. Monica Chappell was there, and she was as a woman of Dawn Canada, which stands for the Disabled Women's Network, and a lesbian and First Nations. So we had the opening panel sort of give an eye story, and then from there, we took it to place everyone in a stream, or if you will, a subject area, and the subjects we dealt with were, and I'll just run through the list. We had gay lesbian youth, gay lesbian transgender bisexual youth, parenting, relationships, people living with relationships, families living in crisis, families living with disability, being single or being on your own, or friends and other intimates, some would say, aging, and families of origin. And at that point, the groups would get back together again or get into their streams, and they would bring forth three main subjects that would three main messages that they wanted to deliver to the conference itself, to the rest of them, because we didn't all get a chance to see what other streams had to say. And I think I feel like I'm talking at length here, but we have to say that and announce that the National Film Board was there taping. Shanti Dukur was the director, and she's making a videotape dealing with the justice system in Canada. And this was one segment that'll be added to her feature of films or features of videos.
So we're all going to be on TV.
Well, I guess so. We all signed those releases, so.
Excellent. So I think what we should probably do now is go to a song for a second, because I think somebody's trying to get into the studio and steal a CD. And so we should really get off the air and let them do that. But we'll come back, and I want to talk a bit more in detail about the streams that you all participated in. Sound good?
Sounds great. Right.
Okay, excellent. Holly Cole Trio, CITR 101.9 FM, and their version of I Can See Clearly Now, originally done by Johnny Nash. And it's Heather's show for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities. We're talking about Family Day and the notion of family and this conference that was held by the December 9th Coalition yesterday. And if you'd like to give us a call and maybe join us on the air, 822-2487. And if I accidentally don't answer the phone, it's because I'm on the air as well. But give us a try. Kathy Mandigo, Craig Maynard, and Ellie Newman are all joining us who were part of Family Day yesterday. And Craig, you were just saying off the air what you thought the total attendance was yesterday. Do you want to share that with us for a sec?
Well, sorry. about 120 is what we figure was there, which is...
That was capacity, if
that
I'm
was,
not mistaken.
That was capacity. We were... some of them were sitting on the back back tables in the back, and so we didn't really get a firm count on it. The purpose of the day was not to organize structure into the actual numbers there, but we knew that we were pretty close to about 120.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Did we make money?
Yeah, the coalition made money on this one, and it's... It was, I think, after expenses, I'm going to ballpark this one, but somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1,200.
Oh, super.
So, it really is. It was great. I think the average person, because the cost was a sliding scale between 0 and 50, and I think if you take 120 and say about $1,200, well, I guess there was about $1,700 in revenue came in from the door or at the door. So somewhere around $12 per person if you wanted to create an average figure.
Excellent.
So it was good. It was good. And that money will be well used by the coalition. And we've been on a shoestring budget, so this sort of gives us a bit of breathing space, which is really
we've had no budget, if I'm not mistaken. This is quite a concept to have money to do things. But all right, I want to get into maybe talking a bit about the specific streams that you were involved in. Craig, you were in the dishwashing stream, I think. The stream of water coming out of the sink. But, the pearls of being an organizer. But Kathy, you were the facilitator for the Families in Crisis stream.
That's
so
correct.
Maybe you can give us an overview of what happened in that group.
Well, I co-facilitated with Henry Koo, who was just a wonderful person to work with. He really put a lot of energy into preparing us for the day. So I just want to make sure I acknowledge him because he was very helpful for me. Our Families in Crisis stream, we didn't have a clue what to expect. Because attendance basically was guesstimated, we had no idea until the day actually came what kind of people would be attending, whether they would be resource-oriented or general interest or what to expect. So we started selecting a number of resource people to be available in our stream just to sort of cover a few bases of crisis topics that might arise during the day. So we had a number of people. We had a grief counselor. We had someone who works with Family Services of Greater Vancouver. We had someone from Battered Women Support Services. I should be careful because if I start to name everybody I can remember, I'm sure I'll omit somebody. But we had 7 resource people, and to our great pleasure, we had 11 additional attendees show up. So our stream was maxed out at 20. That was the limit that we placed on all the streams to try to keep it to a manageable number of participants. So we were pleased with the attendance in our stream. We started out after the opening panel, all the streams broke out into their groups, and we had an hour before lunch. And we spent that hour basically getting to know one another. We did a round in the room to introduce ourselves, who we were, why we chose that stream, and what our expectations for the day were. Broke for lunch and reconvened after lunch and spent the afternoon initially discussing family and what the concept of family meant to those who were in the room. And then we moved on to personal experiences with crises. And from there, we developed a bit of a strategy towards managing crisis situations in our lives as lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgendered people.
So what, first of all, were some of the crisis topics that did end up coming up in the circle?
Well, we started by introducing the concept that crisis isn't life-threatening. Crisis is any sort of a situation that affects your life and your ability to cope in your life. And the variety of personal experiences that were discussed certainly reflected that notion. People talked about partners who were diagnosed with cancer and the difficulties of being supportive with a partner with cancer, to coping with bringing your partner to a straight wedding.
We've heard that one before. Yes,
and that was a hot topic in our group.
That's interesting, actually.
It was, because I think what that illustrated very well was that something that in the heterosexual world, which can seem so presumed to be a normal occurrence in life, can really be a difficult situation for those of us who don't participate in that traditional family structure. Being invited to a wedding may be a coming out incident for a lot of people, and that itself can be a crisis for individuals. Also, there's the issue of dealing with being who you are, and one of the concepts that came out of our group was the notion of, I'll back up a bit. People didn't agree on one definition of family, but certainly people distinguished between biological family and family of choice, and that there's this effort we put into integrating these two different families in our lives, and it's problems with that integration, which can be very stressful for those of us who try to do that, that often the typical situation, which got illustrated with the wedding scenario, is that where that integration hasn't worked well, where our families of choice aren't validated and recognized by our families of origin, that in itself can create stress at times of other crisis situations.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, were there any other topics that came up?
In terms of personal examples of crises?
Mm-hmm.
People talked about partners who died or families of origin, members who died, and the difficulty of working with, again, the concept of the integrated family, dealing with terminal illness, death, raising. One woman spoke about raising an adopted disabled child, and that was a chronic stress in the lives of she and her partner.
Hmm. So I'm imagining that the whole issue of coming out to families of origin or being out plays a big role in the whole crisis issue.
It certainly does. As I was saying, that sometimes a crisis situation can force one to have to come out.
Mm-hmm. Like a wedding.
Exactly. People spoke about how they could take advantage of geographical distance between their present lives and where their families of origins lived, and use that to sort of avoid having to make the efforts of integration and to allow a certain amount of segregation between these two families in their lives, and that when a crisis situation develops, such as illness or death or, you know, changes in job or various things, that segregation presents itself as a huge chasm when one tries to draw on various family members for support, whether they be families of choice or families of origin.
Did the whole legal issue come up much at all? Was there legal counsel in your group?
There was. Howard Ehrlich participated in our group. But what we found, Henry and I went into this thinking that we would actually get specific about various resources available for managing crisis situations, and Howard was asked to participate in that capacity as a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
But what we found in our group is, although towards the end when we did specifically start to talk about legal resources, but what people really wanted to discuss in terms of a managing strategy for coping with crises is the importance of being proactive, of trying to work in your life in such a way that when a crisis develops, your ability to cope is maximized as much as it can be. And certainly most crises, or many crises, can't be predicted. But the sort of things that people discussed were working to recognize differences between your family structures in your life as much as possible, trying to produce that sense of integration, trying to present your lifestyle in a way that your family of origin is accountable, that's a good word, Ellie, is accountable to you, and presenting yourself as a person and your partner who are worth respect and recognition and validation from your families of origin. And also more concrete things like preparing legal things as much as possible in advance, discussing wills, discussing power, enduring powers of attorney, discussing health care directives. What else? People also, the grief counselor who was president in our group also suggested the importance of people looking after their own health needs and emotional needs, and as much as possible trying to identify their needs and reach out for help before they were in a situation of crisis or in such a stressful position in their lives that a crisis was provoked.
Excellent. So you had a lawyer, a grief counselor. Who else?
A fellow who works with Family Services of Greater Vancouver, a woman from Battered Women Support Services. We had a transgendered person. Mm-hmm. I'm visualizing the room and doing a round in my head.
Did the issue of abuse within relationships come up at all? Because I'm curious, because I went up to SFU not too long ago to do a session for their peer counseling line. Mm-hmm. And the first thing they asked us was about spousal abuse in gay and lesbian relationships, which I thought was really obscure. But I'm curious to know if it came up in this discussion at all.
It didn't at all, and I was surprised. And one of the reasons why we made a point of having someone from Battered Women Support Services there is we thought just by having the presence of someone who works with those sorts of issues might create a safe space for that to be brought up if people felt like that was a topic they wished to discuss or explore in that venue. But no, it didn't. It didn't arise for us.
What about HIV issues and the whole notion of people finding out they're HIV positive and then having to deal with their families of origin and their partners and possibly children, as the case may be?
Yeah, that didn't arise in our group, although the example of dealing with the death or impending death of an HIV-positive partner was discussed by one of the participants. He discussed how he and his partner, before his HIV-positive partner was close to death, how they discussed who their friends and family were, who they would want to be available at that time, who they would close out from that time, what sort of boundaries they would draw around the people that they would define as friends and family. They also discussed the legal issues of preparing for the event of the death of a partner.
Hmm. Heather, just to add on, while cleaning the dishes, I had the good fortune of overhearing the aging stream talk, and moving down the timeline, one of the things that was talked about by one of the participants was that how, as a survivor of a person who has passed away because of HIV, these people aren't normally thought of or counseled or in any way as being widows or widowers in the traditional sense. And those services and that are, you know, either provided by the government or thought of just in our own by the larger community, when we hear of a het couple that's separated by death, and we tend to rush to them as for support, and you know, we recognize this person as being a widower, and we call them survivors. But that same sort of structure doesn't really exist within the gay community, and this is one of the things that they brought out, is that as an older gay or lesbian or bisexual transgendered person, and I'm thinking more in the senior citizen age category, I guess over 65 to look for a marker. People don't really think of it in the same way, and I think they just sort of think that these are a bunch of single people who just happen to be living together, and they forget about that this is in fact, you know, a family for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I want to come back and talk to you more about the aging stream in a few minutes, because it didn't dawn on me that you would have overheard them washing dishes, but come to think of it, you were in the same room, weren't you?
Yes, I was. I did want to make the point, though. I wasn't exactly eavesdropping. It's just that this person's voice could carry, and it was quite a passionate statement that he was making at the time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Is there anything else that we need to cover for crisis, Kathy?
I think we covered the main issues. The 3 points we came away with in our group was the importance of recognizing the need to integrate as much as possible families of origin with families of choice to help cope when times of crisis arise, the need to recognize our own needs proactively, and that also means to recognize the needs of those around us who may not be able to vocalize their needs, so to reach out to our own community and act as our own resources. And a final issue that we thought might be helpful would be the development of a how-to guide, because being in crisis, that's a time of being vulnerable, confused, and overwhelmed, and to have a book to sort of walk a person through basic things like what reactions and feelings you might expect at a time of crisis, and nitty-gritty stuff like what legal documents do you need to be aware of. That sort of a how-to guide would could be useful, we felt.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's take a break again and go to another song. And when we come back, I want to talk to you, Ellie, about the parenting stream that you were in, and also a bit about your own experience, because I think it's really valuable for lesbian and gay people and whoever else is listening to hear from our kids. CITR 101.9 FM, and Elizabeth Hill, she's a First Nations woman, Mohawk, and that song's called Seven Generations. It's from a compilation of songs called I Am an Eagle, and it also contains some spoken word legends from First Nations history. It's Heather's show for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered communities, 822-2487 if you want to join us. And we're talking about Family Day, the December 9th Coalition's Family Conference that took place yesterday, and Kathy Mandigo and Ellie Newman and Craig Maynard are here, who were all in attendance. And I want to talk to you, Ellie, right now, because, like I mentioned earlier, you come at this from a different angle. You're the son of a gay dad, yep, as opposed to being a gay child of straight parents. And I want to talk to you a bit more about your personal experiences later on. But first of all, you were in the parenting stream.
Yeah.
So tell me just a bit about how that was structured and what kind of people were there and what they all talked about.
Well, in the parenting stream, we mainly had mothers of children and what they felt the community was responsible for giving them,
mm-hmm,
as being, you know, the bringers up of the new anti-homophobic, I don't know, generation of children,
mm-hmm,
and that the services provided by such organizations was not adequate for, mm-hmm, the children and what they had to do with their time.
Do you mean by heterosexual organizations or
by
gay and lesbian organizations?
Every organization,
hmm,
in general, you know.
Yeah.
And also we dealt a lot with personal experiences with co-parents and, you know, how sort of inconclusive it can be, sort of. We discussed how parents want a co-parent to interact with the kids, but at the same time, they want to have full control over who the child is around,
mm,
without having to risk losing their child to someone else at all.
Oh,
so those were a lot of the things that went on in the parenting stream, and I provided my help by showing the point of view of a 16-year-old son of a gay father,
mm-hmm,
looking out.
And you have a really unique point of view because, first of all, you were raised in Alberta, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, not exactly the greatest place for...
I was going to say, I don't want to stereotype Alberta, but I've heard that it's not quite as open as, say, Vancouver's West End. And you... Now, your dad came out when you were how old? Tell me your story about the same story that you told on the opening panel.
All right. When I was about... nine, my parents got divorced for reasons that were not important to the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're children. We didn't ask our questions or whatnot. We just accepted it because that's what we were told to do. So we did. And then some odd years later, when I was about 11, my dad confronted us and told us, you know, that he was gay and said, you know this now, and so I hope this doesn't affect our relationship, which was, I guess, the beginning of the entire affair,
mm-hmm,
from that point on.
So did it affect your relationship?
Without a doubt it did.
Yeah.
You know, it just wasn't the same. You'd look at your dad, and this is from my old point of view, you know, I'd look at my dad and I wouldn't see the same person as I'd see some man-loving fruitcake.
So you'd been raised with a lot of anti-gay stereotypes?
I've been around a lot of that when I was young. Mm-hmm. It was all over the place, and it took me a while, so I thought to myself, you know, I don't like this guy, so I didn't talk to him, and I tried to stay away from him. And at the time, I had to go over and visit him, and when I was there, visiting him on the weekends, I didn't want to have anything to do with him. I'd sit at home and just do nothing, you know. Sometimes, occasionally, I'd eat. I wouldn't accept presents or anything like that, and I was just a really bitter person until, you know, later on in my life, you know, I became more and more exposed as I began to open up my mind a bit, and I realized, you know, how foolish I'd have been, and that there is no really difference. The love is still there. It's just it to who they're giving it to is different.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make you any less of a person. So I realized that, and here I am now living with him.
So what was that process like from the time that you were, I mean, obviously this has been, what, 5 years between the time he came out to you and, you know, now you've decided to move out with him. So tell me about this gradual process. First of all, how was it for you, you know, in Alberta, at school, all this kind of stuff? And you know, at what point did you realize and start to patch things up with your dad?
Well, I didn't really say nothing at school. I'm one of those people that like to have everyone around me. I like to have people around me, and I didn't want to lose that. I knew that by saying something to the people around me, my friends, my teachers, is that automatically, right away, I'd lose that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't feel like putting myself in jeopardy like that, so I just left it. And it wasn't like the greatest of feeling, having to keep something like this kept up inside when all your friends are sitting around making like homophobic jokes around you, and you're just squirming, and it wasn't a very good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't say anything about it at all. And the process of, you know, opening my mind, I don't know where that happened.
Well, did you and your dad at some point sit down and talk? Or, I mean, you seem to have a really good relationship with your dad right now. Is that true?
Yeah, that's quite true. I don't know when it started. It happened a couple years ago. It just magically was there. It's really strange, you know. I'd like to explain a reason, but it just seems to elude me at the time.
So now you live out here, and one thing I'm really curious about, you know, we hear the Reform Party and people on the religious right talking an awful lot about how gays shouldn't be allowed to adopt children because that would put them through hell, and we're not fit to be parents and this kind of thing. From your perspective, I mean, how do you feel about that? Obviously, because of your dad's coming out, you've had a hard time. How do you feel about lesbians and gays raising kids? Do you think that you've lost out because of this, or?
Not really. You know, I'd like to think of myself as being just as normal as the next child.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think there is really a different. It's just, you know, the parenting style differs from parent to parent. It doesn't matter who the parent is with. It matters the fundamentals that the parent teaches their child. And if they raise their child with a decent set of beliefs that to live by, then the child will end up just fine, no matter who their parents are or what their parents are.
So you feel okay about where you're at right now?
Completely okay. And I think that for people to say that, you know, you shouldn't have a child because you're gay, you're lesbian, you're transgendered or bisexual, so we wouldn't give you a child because that'll screw up the child's life, is those people are just way out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Now, you mentioned that you have siblings.
I have two younger brothers.
How are they taking this all in stride? Like, you're the only one that lives with your dad, am I right?
Yeah.
So how are they coping with this? Are they different from you?
Somewhat. My youngest brother, Rafi, he doesn't take it at all. You know, he's still too young to really comprehend what's going on around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he just, okay, dad's gay. That's
does
that.
Does he come out and visit?
Yeah, he does.
Right on.
It's like, for Rafi, it's just like the rest of us. We were told when we were young, So we don't have really anything to worry about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just another one of life's cards.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's almost the same with my brother Ari. Just, he has more of an opinion, you know.
What's his opinion?
Well, it's fine, you know, and it can be around him to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he can only deal with it so much.
Hmm.
You know, and otherwise he'll just snap. He'll just basically start yelling and screaming and basically push out every thought in his head and verbalize it, and or he'll just take off or something like that.
Hmm. That's interesting. So do you know many other children of gay parents now?
A couple here and there.
That are your age, or?
Yep, that are my age, and they seem just as fine as any other child I know as well.
Mm-hmm. Does it help you to have friends who are in the same situation? You know, you can kind of compare notes on what you went through, or does it matter?
It's comforting, but, you know, it doesn't make me feel, like, more secure that there are other people in my situation, but, you know, it's nice to know that I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
In case I might have a problem.
Mm-hmm. So how are things for you now? I mean, obviously, what school do you go to in Vancouver?
I'm not sure.
Do you go to school in Vancouver?
Yeah, I go to school in Vancouver.
Okay, but you're not sure what it's called. In all fairness, you haven't lived here very long, so. But how is it for you now that you're here? Are you out to your friends as?
I'm out to some. A couple of my friends from Edmonton, they came out here and they knew before I did.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are out here. And